The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me today are certified financial planners, Stephen Lucan and Cole Hammack. And today, we're going to get into the tax talk. We've talked about some taxes here in previous podcasts, and we'll continue to talk about it. It's part of our daily life. But if you've ever wondered how your tax bill changes with age, today we're going to kind of decode that process and start from youth to retirement.
Cool. Sounds fun. We were excited when we heard this topic, Tracy.
Well, I'm going to be rapid fire hitting you with questions. I've got it all written down, so bear with me here. So let's break it down for everybody. When somebody saves so much over time, invested in their retirement accounts, and they've spent their entire adult life preparing for retirement, how do they keep Uncle Sam from gobbling it all up in the end? And that's kind of what we're going to get into.
Okay.
Going to go to sort of a chronology. I'm going to hit that first. So kind of break down the ages. We're going to begin with early career, so 20s to 30s, cool. When people are just starting out. How can somebody start out making the most of their 401k or IRA to save on taxes now and in the future at this age group?
Well, I'd say first and foremost, save early and save often. I think especially for that age group, it's very easy to start getting that income and then neglect the saving aspect of it as you're getting into your life, as you're starting to pay bills, as you're figuring out kind of where things are supposed to go. And then it's not until you're in your 30s to 40s do you really start to take it seriously. So first and foremost, and doesn't really answer the tax part, but just to be clear, again, once you start getting paid, start those contributions early and then live off the remainder.
I'm sure you can attest to this. Stephen and I are a little bit older than Cole. And
I'm actually a little bit older than
Stephen, so maybe I'll just speak for myself here. But I can remember, in my 20s making a pretty good income. Mm-hmm. And you guys laugh at me when I bring this up, but we had an ESOP, mm-hmm. Employee Stock Ownership Program. I thought that's all I needed.
Okay,
sure.
And even then, I was not taking full advantage of that. There was really no literacy. There was no mentorship and no opportunity back then, back in the day where there were no computers and resources other than to...
What?
To look up the, encyclopedia, I don't know where you would even get it, right? Other than just trying to reach out for the right person who might have experience.
If you're lucky enough to find the right person.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. They just didn't exist. Yeah. And you didn't know the right questions to mm-hmm. ask at that point. And I presume that a lot of 20 and 30-year-olds to this day feel that way. Some, unfortunately, are relying on TikTok and YouTube for their financial advice, which we're not real fans of. So, it's really, really important to be proactive early on for the compound interest part of it, right?
Sure. But to answer your question regarding taxes, when you're young, you need to understand how taxes work to be able to take advantage of those tax rules and laws and use them to your advantage, because you can. And when you're younger, in your 20s, you might be in a lower tax rate than you are going to be in your 30s and 40s and 50s. So when you're younger, you can use that to your advantage, because when you're younger, the other advantage you have is time, mm-hmm. which is your best your best advantage to investing is time. Mm-hmm. So the more time you have, the better you are. So learn your taxes and then use that to your advantage on the investing side.
I think the learning, kind of understanding the taxes, is so important, because I think a lot of people miss too that the U.S., we have a progressive tax system.
Right.
Meaning some of our income's taxed at one bracket, then the next, versus if you make $100,000 a year, everything taxed at 22%. That's not how that works. You pay a little at 10, a little at 12 before you get to 22. So the idea being is raises are good. If you get a
bonus.
That's
the goal, right?
Yes, yeah. We want to make more money. If you make more money, sure, you're going to pay a little bit more in taxes, but you didn't lose all of that just because you get in that next tax bracket.
Yeah, see, I never knew that up until the time I started working here. And this is such an unsexy conversation and a very, for the average person, especially in their 20s and 30s, people are just not motivated to take the initiative to learn. I would venture to say the vast majority of that age group, just all they care about is, the income.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah, as you said,
you think you're doing it right. You think you're ahead of the eight ball just because you're earning the income and being able to pay your bills, let alone have the forward-thinking mindset to learn and understand what taxes mean to you at that age.
Here's a good one, too, is you have option maybe to contribute to a 401k or 403b, and you think, well, if every dollar I put in, I'm going to lose that dollar on the paycheck. Yeah, but it's not true. You're going to lose a percentage of that dollar on the paycheck. So let's say you put $1,000 into your 401k. That doesn't mean your income goes down by $1,000. It might only go down by $400 or $500. So you actually should learn that, too, and understand that's, again, learning how the tax system works. Mm-hmm. So when you're younger, put it in. Even though you think you're making very little, it's not a one-for-one ratio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what's important, too, is you're not giving up that money. We're just giving up access to it for now.
For now.
Right. So the idea is that's still your money. It's just parked on the side. When we're ready to retire, it's going to be there. I think some people lose sight of that too. It's like, oh, well, this is cutting into my paycheck, but it's still your money. It's just bucketed somewhere else for the time.
Yeah, convincing a 20, 30-year-old that it makes sense to invest some of their income when they have trouble paying their bills is a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right? I was no different too, right? Same. And that was one of the things I learned is, thankfully, I had this conversation. I was 22, 23 years old, and I said, well, I barely get by to pay the rent and bills. And they said, well, it's not a one-for-one ratio. Just do it. Trust me. And I did, and I was shocked when I looked at my paycheck. It didn't go down as much as I thought it would. Mm-hmm. So,
Be receptive to the coaching, right?
Yeah, sure.
Where can people go for the resources for tax literacy?
Listen to Managing to Be Wealthy.
Excellent plug.
just throwing it out there.
All right. I guess I'm going to get my wrist slapped for that one. Okay.
What do you think, Tracy?
So much for that question. All right. Any other place, any software, any kind of website that you know of?
Yeah, I'm sure there's tons of it out there. But again, learn how taxes work. Talk to somebody who understands taxes and breaking it
CPA.
Down. Well, yeah, but you don't even have to go to that level. A lot of people who know taxes are out there can help explain it. Mm-hmm. So just find that resource.
Yeah. And even just like websites like Bankrate, Investopedia are generally fairly reliable too. And I mean, Google, they'll probably be in the top five for the search results kind of thing. And they generally provide very good general information on just how things work or what things mean from a financial landscape.
Okay.
Trust that over TikTok.
Great. Yeah, definitely.
Yes.
So this age group, education expenses are a real prominent part of their life at this point. So what are some of the tax credits people can use, you know, while they're paying off student loans and if they want to go back to school while they're trying to save and pay their bills and do all of this good stuff?
Yeah. So there's two big tax credits that I can think of on the education side. So there's the American Opportunity Tax Credit. I think they used to be like the old HOPE or something like that, or HARP something. And there's the old lifetime learning credit. So the American Opportunity Tax Credit, you can only take advantage of for your undergrad education, but it maximizes, I believe it's at $2,500 per year as the credit. And then the lifetime learning credit is limited to $2,000. I think that one's structured as something like 20% up to $10,000 spent. So it's based on just where you are in your education journey and what sort of expenses you had. But you definitely want to make sure that you're not overlooking that, whether you're working with a CPA or you're doing yourself like a TurboTax or something like that. Make sure you're answering those questions. Say, we did have education, we did pay tuition bills, or if we're already paying student loans, what sort of interest are we paying on? Because you're likely able to get some form of deduction or some form of credit.
Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying, learn the tax credits that are out there. Again, even when you're younger, see what tax, you mentioned education, could be savings credits, right? If you have a certain income level and you can save some money, they'll give you money back. Mm-hmm. And a tax credit is better than a tax deduction, right? Some people think that, okay, a deduction is one thing, but a credit is a one-for-one savings on your taxes. So every dollar you save, you could get a refund of that dollar back to you. So it's basically it's free money through the tax credit system. So understand tax credits, Google it, see what's out there, if it applies to you, or ask somebody, whoever's helping you with your tax returns.
Yeah, and that's a good point. One other thing I want to bring up, especially if you're young and maybe had a family early and maybe we're just kind of getting started in our career, income's lower, the earned income tax credit's one of the best ones out there for that. The idea being is it can give you actually a larger refund as a function of you working, having a family that most people might not think to do otherwise or might not think to even file their taxes because, oh, we don't owe. You still want to file your taxes because you're likely to do something back, especially if you're withholding something through work.
We did a show recently about the shortage of CPAs, and we're not CPAs, but we work with CPAs, and we do a lot of work on tax planning as a company. I think that if from the every person's point of view, if you can look at your living expenses when you're visiting your CPA, and not all CPAs are proficient at obtaining the information, would it be a good rule of thumb for people to think about, all right, here are all of the things that are part of my financial plan, my credit card, my loans, my investment accounts, and then just propose those questions.
Sure.
Do I need to bring this into the picture? Because sometimes the CPAs don't tell you what to bring, or
you don't know what you don't know.
You don't.
Yeah.
Don't know what to ask.
That's where categories
especially
are
this
important,
age.
Right? Even you said credit card, but break it down by category. How much was it on personal care? Okay, can you deduct a haircut? Probably not, but you can deduct a doctor's appointment, maybe. Right.
Yeah.
So find out and have review that with the tax preparer, making sure that you're taking full advantage of potential deductions.
That brings me to my next question. So claiming deductions for job hunting and moving, you just kind of touched on deductions. What are some of the deductions someone could take advantage of in a new job situation?
I know at one point you could, those miscellaneous itemized deductions. Can you still?
It's available, but everything depends. The tax law has changed so much because not everyone gets itemized deductions. So that's where, again, categorizing your expenses will help provide that clarity. Maybe you can, maybe you can't. It just depends on your level of complexity.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that applies to everything, whether it's medical expenses,
charitable gifts.
It's like you're
charitable
in my head.
Giving,
the next thing I was going to ask about was
losses,
the HSAs.
Natural disaster loss or casualty, car accident, stuff like that. Those things can potentially be deductible. Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Even if you don't have a business out of the house.
Maybe not. Correct.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah.
So utilizing health savings accounts or HSAs, how do those work? Let's explain to people how those work and how they can use them to save on taxes and medical expenses.
I think HSAs are super cool tools in the sense that they're the only tool out there that's triple tax advantaged, meaning when you make contributions to the account, you get a federal tax deduction. It grows tax-free. And when it comes out, as long as it's for a qualified medical expense, it's also tax-free. So it's basically an IRA, a 401k on steroids, but limited to those medical expenses.
Where do you get one?
Well, through your employer.
So
it depends
on generally.
Yeah, but it depends on the quality of your health insurance. The type of health insurance you have determines whether or not you qualify for an HSA. So you have to go through your health insurance to determine, is it an HSA eligible policy?
Yeah.
Okay. So
that's
step one. Yeah. So that's step one. And then some information on that itself, Cole explained how they work, but from how to build your financial plan around it is try to use it and use it as a savings investment account rather than a usage account. A lot of people, when you're younger, you have kids, it's like immediately they give you the HSA bank card. Any medical expense, you're swiping the card and using those funds. The end of the year, your contributions are all used up, which is great. You had those unfortunate or necessary medical expenses, but now your account's at zero. What you should try to do is have it grow. And as Cole said, that it's tax-free growth. And it can be used throughout your lifetime. So everybody, I've yet to meet somebody who's retired and not had medical expenses, out-of-pocket medical expenses.
Amen.
So have it, you build your financial plan where you're growing it and building it, saving it, and growing your HSA. So when you're retired, you could have $100,000, $200,000 in your HSA, and that's there for your prescription pills, any out-of-pocket costs.
Is that managed on a utilitarian level? Is that managed like a Roth or any other kind of
any
retirement
kind of,
tool?
Correct.
You're contributing to it, right?
Yeah. You can, in the old days, it was use it or lose it with the flexible spending account. But now the HSA, as soon as they announced it, I'm like, this is a much better plan because you can have it grow. You can accumulate funds in the account.
Yeah, and so one thing I will add is, generally speaking, Stephen, to your point, most people are getting their health insurance through work. That's not the case for everybody. Maybe you have a marketplace plan or something like that. So the big thing is you definitely want to meet the qualifier for an HSA, so a high deductible health care plan. So your deductible has to be over a certain level. The maximum out-of-pocket has to be below a certain level. So you'd want to double-check that online first. But in those instances, you can set up your own HSA, and you just bring that with you wherever you go. That's your tool, your money. So that's cool. So you can always contribute to it as long as you're eligible to contribute to a high deductible health plan.
I feel like we could do a whole podcast just about HSAs. Easy.
Well, you're in charge.
Yeah. Easy.
Challenge accepted.
One more thing I'll add to it, just because I think it's so cool. Because Stephen, to your point, if you let it grow, it's $100,000, it's $200,000, and you get to retirement. If you held on to receipts, say you held on to receipt from 2024. Showing a medical expense, and you present that to the HSA company in 2040 and 2050 when you retire, they'll reimburse that old expense.
Wow. So even though you're paying out of pocket at that time in your life, you stand to get it back if you don't.
Absolutely.
If it's in the account.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's pretty cool.
So a good story I had, a client had a good amount of money in an HSA. We got it accumulated, and we started to review the purpose of the account. They were well retired. And he's like, I need new teeth. I go, what do you mean? He goes, I have to get all my teeth replaced. So I was like, okay.
It's like a $40,000 or $50,000 expenditure,
bingo.
Right?
It was $40,000 paid through from the HSA tax-free, and most of it was growth. So the original principal contribution was only a fraction of what he actually used the money for. Mm-hmm. The rest of it was all invested in growth, and it was a tax-free new set of teeth.
So, but he looks good, too.
Yeah. He looks fantastic.
Money well spent.
Exactly.
Or money well saved,
thrilled,
I should say.
Right? Yes. He was thrilled. He didn't have to take it out of his IRA, pay taxes on it,
yeah.
came out tax-free, and was covered.
Fantastic. A dazzling white smile.
Yep.
All right. Jumping into mid-career. Yeah. So mid-career 40s and 50s.
Yep.
Maximizing retirement contributions. Should we be putting more into the retirement accounts now, especially with contribution catch-ups?
Yes, right? The answer is always yes.
Cool. Realistically, you want to do it as soon as possible. Naturally, when you're just getting started to the last point, bare minimum, make sure you're contributing up to the company match if there is one. But by this point, you're usually at those peak earning years. You're making the most you'll likely ever be making. There might be some room for increasing down the line, but why not take advantage of that? So getting the tax savings now, building that bucket for retirement, creating future flexibility, it makes all the sense in the world.
And you have to build your plan around your income. Your income is what it is. Mm-hmm. Now, okay, what comes next? Right?
Say that again. Right? Your income is what it is. I'm just having this conversation
with somebody.
There's no
speculation, right? There's I might make more next year, so I'll build my plan around next year because it sounds better. It's easier. But no, you have to build your plan around what you have today. Mm-hmm. And what people lose focus on is they just throw money into their 401k or 403b and they ignore everything else. Mm-hmm. Or then you add on, we got to pay the mortgage. Okay, yeah, you have a mortgage payment, have to pay the insurances, health insurance, homeowners, auto, car payments, education savings. And people ignore any other secondary savings for themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's where most people get into trouble is they're putting all their money into an IRA type investment, whether it's a 401k or 403b. But anytime, let's say you meet your qualifying age to take the money out, and now I need to spend money, that money gets taxed coming out. And it gets taxed at whatever bracket you're in. So the reason I'm saying this is diversify your savings. Diversify it into an after-tax savings account, a Roth IRA type account, and then a regular IRA or 401k, 403b account. So all three have different tax qualifications that gives you flexibility. It's hard to accomplish.
Isn't the advantage, though, those younger people have the better advantage? If we're talking 40s and 50s, is that something that really some 40s
Well, the reason I'm saying that is your income mm-hmm. should be growing at that point.
Okay.
For most people, you start to really get a good amount of income, mm-hmm. and now you might have more discretionary income. So I'm saying just diversify how you're saving mm-hmm. your money into what categories.
Yeah. Let's tell people what the max is for each of those accounts.
Technicality is here.
Yeah, it's all age-based.
Research.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So for 2024, the 401k contributions, $23,000. If you're over the age of 50, you get a catch-up contribution of $7,500. So your maximum would be $30,500. Stephen, to your point on those technicalities, if you're a business owner, you have your own 401k plan, then that can be as high as, I believe it's $69,000 right. before the catch-up contribution, mm-hmm. so all the way up to $76,500. Mm-hmm. So there could be a lot of room to run mm-hmm. on the 401k side. The IRAs, the limit's $7,000 this year with a $1,000 catch-up contribution if you're over 50. Mm-hmm. So you can get up to $8,000. HSAs have their own limits as well based on your family plan or individual plan or over 55. So there's a lot.
That's why I don't like you asking those questions because they change every year too, okay. right? So that's why I don't want to. I need a laptop here to research yeah. this stuff yeah. and putting me on the spot.
We'll put like a chart up here, exactly. right? Yeah. Can we do okay. that yet?
All yeah. right. What's an example of a tax efficient investment, and should somebody consider this to reduce their tax bill?
Tax efficient investment. I guess a tax efficient investment immediately would be a municipal bond, tax free bond. But here's a good learning for that is a lot of people say, "Oh, I want a tax free bond." The starting point is what is your tax rate? Because you might be actually losing money yep. by investing in a tax free bond because you think it's great. I'm not paying any taxes, but you might be in the lowest tax bracket.
Okay.
So it would be to your advantage to have a taxable bond, pay the taxes, and you'd have more money. It's about how much you have after the taxes are settled.
Right.
So it's an after-tax calculation. So tax-efficient investing is you got to be very careful with it because you might be shooting yourself in the foot mm-hmm. or leaving money on the table, however, whatever analogy you want to use. But you just want to make sure you understand taxes and is it the right one? Is okay. it the right type of investment?
I'll take it a slightly different direction too because maybe it's even the difference between like an ETF and a mutual fund.
Sure.
Yeah. So the idea is that a mutual fund or a mutual fund company, they're required to pay out capital gains to their shareholders. That usually happens in the fourth quarter, call it November, December timeframe. So essentially, if a mutual fund company makes money, they're passing that on to you. So you may get surprised getting into the next year when you're filing your taxes, you're getting all your tax forms, a pretty nasty tax bill that you weren't expecting. So ETFs, so an exchange-traded fund, trades like a stock, but a basket kind of structured like a mutual fund, they don't have that same issue where they may pay out. That's the same case with like actively managed mutual funds are going to be a lot more tax aggressive right. than say a passively managed mutual fund. So if you're concerned about taxes, then maybe consider an ETF or consider a passively managed fund versus something active.
But you also have to depends on what type of account you're investing in.
That's a great
right?
point.
See, right? So yep. there's so many variations.
There's a lot of layers.
Right?
Yeah.
So the layer one is what type of account is. Is it a tax-deferred account?
Yeah.
All tax efficiency goes out the door because it's irrelevant when you're talking about investing taxes with investments. Mm-hmm. So, again, there's so many layers to it. You just got to start with what type of account yep. and the type of investment and then what your tax rate is.
Okay. This doesn't necessarily apply to this age group. It actually could apply to the 20s and 30s, but we're going to talk about child care and mm-hmm. taxes. So are there tax breaks for child care or dependent care expenses?
Yeah. Yeah. So I believe it's limited to, for dependent care, I think up to $3,000 in expenses for one child, up to $6,000 for two or more. And then the credit's something like, I think maybe 10% or 20% of whatever that number, I think it's 20%. Of whatever that number is. So to the point earlier, track whatever you're spending.
And wherever it's going,
things,
yeah.
And wherever
yeah.
it's going yeah. on things like child care, report that to the CPA or, again, TurboTax if you're doing it yourself to say, hey, yeah, I do have a child. There was child care. Make sure you're maximizing those deductions.
Dependent care expenses. Dependents can be adults,
older
too.
Older, too, correct.
Yeah,
right.
Great
so
point.
If you're,
it can be anybody
if you're
that
caregiving
care
for somebody,
yeah.
Ancillary costs for taking care of them as well as...
And it might even, again, working with your CPA, but bringing that elder person into your household so mm-hmm. you can qualify them as a dependent on your tax return could be a tax advantage to you as well.
Yeah. Okay. I think the qualifier there is if you're providing more than 50% of their financial support.
Okay.
Usually what you're looking for. So if you're hitting that number,
that's good to know.
You could.
Yeah.
Then, again, having that conversation, definitely.
Okay. Yep. Managing home-related deductions, can you deduct your mortgage interest, property taxes, and home office expenses?
Steven already took this one,
yeah. Depends, sort of. Yes, you can, if you itemize your deductions.
Yep.
Again, the tax code has gotten very simplified. 2017 and earlier, 35% of the tax returns use itemized deductions. That's where your question stems from, because everyone deducted mortgage interest, mm-hmm. property taxes, state taxes.
It was easy.
Right? And you just, and medical expenses, it was all on one sheet.
Yeah.
They revamped the tax code to simplify it and expanded the standard deduction. That's where most people forget. They expanded mm-hmm. this, they doubled up the standard deduction so they would eliminate itemized deductions, and the itemized deductions reduced from 35% to I think like 6 or 7%. So they got rid of a lot of that itemized deduction work. So can you? Yes, but it depends whether or not you itemize your tax deductions.
And it's more of a percentage, isn't it? In some cases, if you have like a business out of your home, it could be a percentage of your phone bill or a percentage of your.
So that's fair. So that would be a little bit different. I think maybe compared to the question here, that would be on the business side. So mm-hmm. if you have certain things or a home office, mm-hmm. yeah, those may still be deductible, or at least easier to on a Schedule C in this case.
So check with your CPA.
Yeah, always.
Stay informed about tax law changes. We talked a lot about this. Taking responsibility and. Tax laws frequently change. Do we know of any recent tax laws that have changed that people should be aware of that might affect their tax planning this year?
Is the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act still recent?
Yeah, I'm trying, right? Exact. Good question.
Define recent.
Yeah.
We'll go 6 months.
No. Nothing this year that stands out to me.
Good.
I'd say the biggest one, I'd say, recent change, not really tax code so much, but the 529 plans, and I'm sure we've talked
correct.
About that.
Yeah, that's a good one.
But the idea is that 529 plans have been expanded, that if there's any excess or just unused funds after the beneficiaries, we'll just say no longer needing the funds, up to $35,000 can be rolled over into a Roth IRA for that beneficiary, which is pretty cool.
It is cool.
Which is pretty
and
cool.
And a 529 is a?
College savings.
Yep. Okay. Great question.
Great. Yep. Pre-retirement 50s and 60s, getting into the good years now. Reviewing your retirement plan. How should you readjust or adjust your retirement savings now to make sure you're on track for retirement? I mean, how does this look different than your 40s or 50s?
This is a loaded question, because the way we look at it is it's a journey. And you're always on the path, right? You're always on that path. We set it up for our clients to say, here's the path you're taking. Here's how much you're going to save every year. And when you hit this age, based on your goals, you should be financially independent.
Right off into the
sunset. Right, and you ride off into the sunset. So it's sort of a loaded question. It shouldn't change. But again, if you're trying to build it yourself, start with diversifying your savings accounts. Mm-hmm. Don't just focus on IRAs and 401ks and 403bs, because you're going to handcuff yourself when you need to take the money out.
So you shouldn't. It's not a good idea to convert some of your accounts at this stage of the
you
game.
You could. No, you could. Everything is.
There's a lot of depends.
It depends, right? You got to look at every individual case and say, okay, how does this apply? It might be worth it even to pay a higher tax on it. Because it could be in a down market and say, okay, let's pay the tax now at a higher rate and get the rebound when the market rebounds. That's not where we are right now, but those are the scenarios that could play out. So,
or you might be in a different, you might actually be in a lower tax bracket post-COVID if you chose to leave your job and you're taking a little bit of a change in your employment.
Yeah, if you have a down year where all of a sudden you might be in between a job and you have a low income, yeah, it could be opportunity to do a Roth conversion. Mm-hmm. So, again, managing your taxes is so critical.
For sure.
I want to talk about utilizing qualified charitable distributions. We call those QCDs in our universe. How can mm-hmm. you use these from an IRA to lower taxable income? Yeah, let's tell people what they are and how they work first.
Yeah, so a qualified charitable distribution is a way that you can gift directly to a charity from an IRA that you have. It's one of the very few ways that you can take money out of a pre-tax account like an IRA without paying a dime in taxes on it. So the idea is, if you're already charitably inclined, if you're at least 70 and a half years old, so that's key, you have to be 70 and a half, then you can gift from an existing IRA up to $100,000 per year, that's the cap, to any organization that's a 501c3.
So good summary.
Yeah. Nailed it. So the benefit, though, being is rather than using after-tax dollars, so something that you, whether it's a paycheck or a brokerage account or whatever, this lets you use something that's never been taxed before, that let you save maybe 22, 24, 30-odd percent while you were working, and then just shift that over to charity, which was your plan anyway, mm-hmm. and come out way ahead on that calculation.
And this goes back to the change in tax code from the itemized deductions to standard deductions.
Right.
So when I said that itemized deductions used to be able to deduct your charitable contributions, and the charities, when they changed that tax law to charities, like, people are going to stop giving to charity. Mm-hmm. You need to help us out here. And that was one of the ways they circumvented that tax law change.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Very
giving
effective.
For the right reasons, right?
Yep.
Planning for Social Security taxes. What's the best way to minimize taxes on Social Security benefits? This one always blows my mind when you guys talk about this, because you spend your life paying into Social Security, and then
it's a
very small percentage of what you make, and then you get to take it out, and then you get to pay taxes on it again.
Mm-hmm.
It's just...
It gets taxed up to people. It gets taxed up to 85% of the benefit amount, not 85% tax. Some people think it gets taxed at 85%.
Okay, my brain just exploded.
Yeah. So let's say you get $10,000. For every $10,000, 85% of it is taxable. So $8,500 would be taxable as income.
Okay.
So it's not, the full amount is not taxable.
It's still too much.
85, and it could be lower based on your income levels. It could be zero tax on it. So it depends on your income level. But I would say for most people, if you have a sound financial plan, have saved, have a good lifestyle, it was probably 85% of it will be taxable. It could be, I think, 50% is the next break.
Yeah, 50, 85.
0, 50, or 85%
and
of it.
It's, to your point, it is exceptionally difficult to reduce taxes on Social Security because the brackets are so low for it. Yeah. So for a married filing joint, so spouses going through it, if your income's over, I think, $44,000, then you're in that 85% of your Social Security is
so you don't want taxable. To be below that just from a poverty level.
Yeah. Right.
It would be a horrible situation to be in.
Yeah.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Okay. 10 years here and I just learned something new.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Optimizing health insurance coverage. What should people know about the tax implications of Medicare and other health care costs in their 50s and 60s as they're approaching retirement? Or...
Meet with an expert.
Meet with a Medicare specialist.
Yes.
The big thing is they test your income to see. So if when you're retired, where does your income come from? Social Security, pensions, IRA distribution, savings, and so forth. So all of that is reported on your tax return. Medicare will look at your income through your tax return and say, based on your income level, here is what your Medicare premiums will be.
Okay.
So the more you have in your 401ks, the higher your Social Security benefit is. All that's going to do is increase your Medicare premiums. So you got to be careful. Yes.
Be careful. So I guess you'd
be careful, but got to be aware. Let me aware of what's going
on. So saving over a lifetime could come back to bite you a little bit.
I call it champagne problems, right? These are the problems you want to have, right?
Yes.
You've done all the right things
for
your life,
problem.
Right? And now we get to drink your champagne, but there's a price to pay.
Okay.
And that's in the form of taxes. Yeah. With Medicare, let's say you have a windfall. Maybe you inherited an IRA, you cash it out, all of a sudden you have a large tax bill for that one given year.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually challenge that. It's called IRMA, Income-related
Medicare Adjustment something.
Yeah. So you can actually challenge that and say, this is a one-time event, and here's the information, and they will then alter your Medicare premiums if it was a one-time event.
Well,
it's a two-year look-back.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they look back 2 years, so it sort of sneaks up on you.
Yeah. They'll do the same thing for selling a rental property. So if you do that, you can appeal that. But if you sell a primary residence or do a Roth conversion, generally something like within your control that's not an investment, then tough luck, you're paying the bill.
Yeah.
Okay. That's
but
good
then,
to know.
Then the Medicare premiums will fall back when... Yeah. When it goes into a normal. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Retirement years. So 60s and beyond. Managing RMDs or required minimum distributions. How does somebody plan for their withdrawals to avoid penalties and maximize their tax bracket in this age group?
I'd say understand where all your accounts are is key, because they are looking at it as an aggregate. So they're taking the valuations. I say they, the IRS, looking at the valuation or want to see the valuation of all of your accounts on December 31st of the year prior that you're taking your required minimum distributions. And then you need to take a specific amount. But if you're not aware an account is out there or a 401k you missed from an old employer, then you're going to take just based on what you know, which is under what's expected. And there's a 50%, I think it's still 50% penalty on the difference between what you're supposed to take and what you didn't.
Yeah, don't forget about it. You know, when you combine the word the and IRS, spells theirs.
Oh, well.
Just saying.
It sure is.
I love it. That's not even dad humor. That's actually really good.
Yeah, that's scary humor. Yeah.
That's funny. But yeah, just understand what you have, where you have it. It's based exclusively on pre-tax accounts. So like for Roth IRAs, Roth 401ks, there's no RMDs. For brokerage accounts, there's no RMDs. It's just if you have a pre-tax 401k, traditional IRA, rollover, those sorts of things, there will be. So just understand what you have, where you have it, and then take whatever they tell you to take out.
If you're taking RMDs and you're already, you've got an established income from other sources and you're comfortable, what should you do with that RMD? Is it to save taxes? Should you just hide it under the bed, put it in a CD? I mean, what is a good thing?
Well, you brought up a good one earlier, the qualified charitable distribution. So okay, let's say your RMD is $100,000, your required minimum distribution, and every year we give to charity $10,000. You do the qualified charitable distribution, you take out $100,000, $10,000 goes directly to the charity, only $90,000 gets reported on your tax return as taxable. So you've reduced your taxes, you've fulfilled your charitable goals, and it's win-win. So that's one way.
And it's like a big chess game.
It is a chess game.
And then the rest of it you can put under your mattress if you want to.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do love that. It's like people were like, well, what do I do with it? I'm like, enjoy it, right?
Yeah. Please.
Yeah. Right? I wonder why you smiled. That must be a question you get often.
You'd be surprised if the account is managed, invested properly, and I have to use these words carefully, but if it's invested properly, your accounts, it stays relatively consistent. Like your RMDs grow a little bit with inflation, but the account's value stays pretty good. That RMD schedule is very good to maintain that account value. Sure. Like, but if you overdraw, let's say you're pulling out 5-10% of the account, that's when you put stress on your IRA. So you should, again, you people retire 59 and a half, they can start taking money out of their IRAs. And a lot of people do that, but you should try not to do that. Wait, let that grow in the IRAs, the 401k, 403b, and then go to the schedule, and it should be pretty consistent. Add the RMD to your Social Security benefit or pension benefit, you have a good income stream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great. Leveraging tax-advantaged accounts. And we may have touched on this earlier, but how can you continue to use HSAs in this age group and other tax-advantaged accounts effectively?
Yeah, I think we, by and large,
pretty much touched that.
Just use
them.
Yeah, especially in your elder years for the HSAs, you have medical expenses. And even if you're itemizing or deducting your medical expenses, Medicare premiums is a qualified medical expense.
Yeah.
So if you have a major medical event in your older years, a lot of out-of-pocket expenses, and you're starting to add up all my medical costs, Medicare premiums are included in their qualified medical expense.
And that's, you can, how much is that? Is that like for the every person, you can write off a certain amount once you exceed?
It's a percent, 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. And it just, again, it's a formula, and it's a little complex, but most people ignore Medicare premiums because it comes right out of your Social Security check.
I would never have thought to.
Right?
To,
and that's a qualified medical expense.
Great.
So, and unfortunately, some people in their older years have maybe a major medical issue. And it's that 1 year, it's a terrible situation. Then we have a lot of medical expenses, include your Medicare premiums.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you have to travel too. That's one people overlook.
Right.
You have
to travel to and from. Care. Yeah. Maybe you have to go to the doctor to and from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Good point.
Or plane tickets or like you have to go to the Mayo Clinic for something.
There, exactly. Again, IRS.gov is a monstrous site, but just qualified medical expenses. There's a whole 702 or whatever it's called, I think. And they list all of them.
Great resource.
Yeah.
Okay, how do state taxes affect retirement income?
Okay, well, here's a good one. Some states tax with IRA distributions and Social Security. Some states do not. So depending on where you live, you should look into that because some of the state tax code does not tax IRAs. I think it's Illinois might be one of them. I'm not sure. But again, the Google search, right, or look it up. And then some states will tax Social Security, some will not. So it just depends. But state taxes are very, very tricky because each state is independent.
Yeah. And then you have what, like 7 or 11, something like that, with no state income tax. But right. They might have other forms of taxes.
I was going to say, how do they get it out of you then?
Yeah, usually sales tax is higher. Property taxes might be a little bit higher. So they figure out how to get
it. Yeah, CVS tax, right. The other one is a state tax.
Yeah,
or state inheritance tax. Sometimes both apply. So it all depends, and that's why people may relocate when they're retired, is to avoid that inheritance tax or estate tax.
I'm sitting here looking at my last. Wow, right. Are you telepathic? When should a person consider moving?
We set a series of mirrors that he's able to.
Yeah, I mean that was literally one of my questions. When should somebody consider moving, relocation?
I hate moving just because of money.
Yeah.
Right? I hate that.
That complicates things.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Are you doing it for the right reason or the wrong reason? And you don't want to make decisions solely on money because there's emotion and family and possibly involved. But you should need to weigh what kind of taxes come down the road, whether it's state income tax or estate or inheritance tax. Those are considerations. Yeah. Estate tax is paid through your estate. Inheritance tax is paid by the beneficiaries. And they could both get taxed. Crazy.
Yeah.
I think New Jersey has both.
New Jersey got rid of their state estate tax. Pennsylvania has both.
Pennsylvania has both, yeah.
The gray state of PA, your favorite.
Yeah, they need their tax revenue. Not much of it. So
For this age group, we may have already touched on this. What are the specific tax implications of investing in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and EFTs?
Yeah, so I think this is kind of to Stephen's point. It kind of depends on where they are. So if it's in an IRA, a Roth IRA, nothing. Not to worry about any of it until you take a distribution. Then maybe it's taxed, maybe it's not. But that's not really based on what's invested in there, rather just what the balance we took out was. Within a brokerage account, that goes back to the mutual funds. They pay out capital gains at the end of the year that you need to be aware of. Actively managed funds are going to be a little bit more aggressive in that sense than passive and ETFs, those sorts of things. So I'd say that's the short answer there.
Sounds like you really need a certified financial planner more so in your senior years than you do in early
all
on.
Throughout, because that's planning, right? You start even in their 50s and 60s, you're talking to clients, here's what it's going to look like.
But a lot of people think I'm already in retirement, I don't need the help. But people do need the help in retirement.
Sure, all the way through, it's planning. You have to plan this out, and you're always talking to somebody in their 60s or 50s. Here's what RMDs will look like when you're set. There's a tax law change. It changed. RMDs have changed from 70 and a half to 72 and a half to 73, and it's going to be 75.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm talking to clients in their 50s and 60s. When you're 75, this is what your RMD is going to look like. The only unknown is we don't know what the tax code is going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
But you're planning along the way. You're always planning, and you're somebody in their 70s and 80s, you're planning for the next generation, too, if they have enough assets.
But the assumption should not be, I'm already in retirement. I've got it covered.
Yeah.
Because this is a universe. There's just so many pitfalls and potentials that people need to be aware of in retirement, not just before they start the process,
That's why it's financial planning and not financial planned.
Well said.
Ha, ha, ha.
It's an active.
Ha, ha, ha. I did it.
That's
what's
humor.
The English term for active, right? Planned versus planning. Never mind. I'm not an English major, so you're more.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Michael, you're behind. You're behind here.
Active versus passive.
Yeah.
Oh, I wasn't sure if there's like a.
Yeah. Never mind.
Planning. That's a derivative.
There we go. It's a past participle.
All right.
No idea.
Timing and tax planning. Can you help our followers figure out when to sell investments, make withdrawals, and contribute to keep their taxes low in their 50s and 60s? Or excuse me, in their 60s and up.
Can we just say yes? Can we just say yes, we can?
Sell investments, make withdrawals, and contribute.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it.
Pretty much the same story. No, really, that doesn't change, right?
From No, again, it starts with your taxes, and it depends on your income, how high your income is. Yeah, and then because there's extra taxes based on income levels. If your income is over $250,000, there's an extra tax. There's the Medicare premium tax. There's so many different add-ons based on income levels. That's why you do need a good planner and a good accountant sometimes to navigate you through these.
Okay, I want to talk about tax loss harvesting. What is it? How does it work? What should people look for to use it to lower their taxes?
So in essence, it's taking advantage of losses in a brokerage account to offset potential or even future gains. So the idea is we'll pick 2022, for example. It's an awful year for the stock market. Market was down 20% by the end of the year. If you had a brokerage account, there may have been opportunities to sell some of those funds that you were in, capture those losses, and then plan to reinvest those funds into something similar enough, but not so substantially similar where they're like, well, sorry, we're going to waive those losses. So there's a lot of nuance to it. You got to be very careful so you don't oops and get rid of everything you did. But it's a way that you can help kind of reset your basis, put yourself in a better tax position moving forward.
That sounds very high risk.
No, it's not high risk at all. Mm-hmm. It's opportunistic. Yeah. What you'll see, the articles are all written when there's a large downturn in the market, like 2022 or 2008, yeah. Making lemonades out of lemons. And that's the mm-hmm. lemon being the bad market. How do you make lemonade out of it is tax loss harvesting. So it's just basically taking a bad moment in time and basically accumulating some tax deductions to your advantage.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Depending on the size of the loss, I mean, you could sell everything, reinvest in a similar but completely different portfolio by way of what the investments are, and you might have hundreds of thousands of dollars of losses just pooled that you can use against future gains for years to come. So I can save you a lot of money in taxes.
It's opportunity in a bad moment in time.
Yeah. That's incredible. Yeah. Yeah. Well, the moral of the story is seek the help of your CPA and your certified financial planner. Yes. They will team together to bring you the best results. That's it for today. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it. We appreciate you tuning in. We hope you'll come back.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.